Hello, welcome to the Afikra podcast. My name is Mikey Mhennam. On today's episode, we feature a conversation between me and Khalid Limlahi. Khalid is a professor at the University of Chicago. His work focuses on the literature of Morocco. This conversation was originally recorded on Zoom on October 29th. Hope you enjoy. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining. My name is Mikey Mhennam. Our special guest today is Khalid Limlahi. He is an assistant professor of French and Francophone studies at the University of Chicago. He holds a PhD from the University of Oxford and a master's degree in engineering from a school that I cannot pronounce in southern France. He worked for 8 years as a civil engineer and project manager in Paris and London before moving into academia. His current work explores North African Francophone literature in relation to political, social, and cultural debates in the region and beyond. He has recently been focused on three prominent contemporary Moroccan writers, which we will discuss. Mohamed Khairuddin, Abdel Kabir Khataibi, and Abdel Latif Laabi. Khalid, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I'm really, really excited to have you here.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your invitation. And thank you for the people who made this possible. I'm very pleased to be here.
I think the first place to start is, how did you get into engineering and then decide to leave engineering and go into literature?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this question. I would say I grew up actually in Morocco, as you've mentioned, and I grew up with this idea, which is probably relevant in other Arab countries, is that in order to have to make a career, in order to have a successful career, you need to study science instead of the humanities. So I grew up basically being pushed and encouraged to study maths, physics. So I studied science basically, and the Moroccan education system has some similarities with the French one for obvious historical reasons. So I studied maths, and then I found myself doing this this thing that is called classe préparatoire, which is basically 2 years of intensive learning in preparation to enter engineering school, either in Morocco or in France. So I did only 1 year, and then I moved to France, where I studied engineering in southern France. Yeah.
So were you a particular literary kid growing up? Did you, devour literature, but you just happen to be good at math and happen to have sort of North African Arab parents who forced you to study sciences?
That's exactly the case. Actually, I should mention that my parents are both professors of Arabic. So my father,
were they also engineers too?
No, at all. No, at all. They came, I mean, that's one of the interesting aspects I think, is that they studied humanities and they studied literature. But they encouraged us, given the context, to go and study science. So my father actually teaches rhetoric, that's his area, and my mom teaches grammar, Arabic grammar. So they basically teach the new generation of the teachers, right? So they have this they work at this school where they prepare high school teachers. I grew up, well, obviously I grew up reading a lot of literature, a lot of books, a lot of novels. And my father pushed me early on to borrow books from the French institutes and read the books and write down summaries of these books. So I grew up as a literary person, as a literary kid. And I think it's always been like part of my activities, and I kept this in mind as I was studying science.
So as a kid, I think we're about the same age. So growing up in the sort of 80s and 90s, with two parents who study and work in Arabic,
did you feel like French was the language of the colonizer? Was that something you thought? If I spoke to 12-year-old Khalid, would you say, oh my God, French colonizer?
No, not at all. At all. French has... I grew up with this image of French as a language that actually, as most kids actually in my from my generation, as the language of culture, as the language of education, as the language... Yeah. The language basically that would open, how can I say, like opportunities abroad as well, right? This doesn't mean that Arabic was, I mean, at least at home, that Arabic was devalued at all. I mean, I was reading novels in Arabic, and I think I grew up bilingual in that sense. But I think very early on, yeah, I mean, French for me was the language of literature. Because I mentioned the experience with the French institutes. I think that experience changed a lot of things and kind of pushed me towards French literature very early on, French language as well. Because I took classes and yeah, sorry.
Piggybacking on that point, was it the language of Moroccan literature? Was it the language of intellectualism for Moroccans, if I spoke to the sort of teenage Khalid?
It was the language, how can I say, like language for public services and administrations. And you see what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So not necessarily for Moroccan literature, because at the time, I mean, I grew up not reading Moroccan literature. That's the interesting thing.
Yeah, so this is where I'm trying to get to, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was not reading when I was a kid. I was not reading Moroccan literature, unfortunately. It came quite late, to be fair. I grew up reading a lot of French literature, all the French classics. And I think that's, I mean, I'm aware of that. And I think it has influenced and shaped my literary tastes, I would say. Yeah. But then at high school, when I was in high school, I started discovering this whole generation of Moroccan writers, and I started kind of making the first connections with what I've learned before. Yeah. Especially given that actually, most Moroccan writers are familiar with French literature, including the ones who write in Arabic.
Yeah. So if I can sort of move on a little bit, you know, your work deals with this, deals with many things, but deals with this, your most recent work deals with this sort of generation of Moroccan writers who were growing up in the 60s, or not growing up in the 60s, were becoming immediately prolific in the 60s. Many of them were born in the sort of the 20s and 30s. Can you talk to me a little bit about this book, this very seminal text from Khataibi, which was published in 1983? When do you remember first becoming aware of this book? Was this a book that was on the shelf, on your mom and dad's shelf? When did you first become aware of this decolonialized? Decolonized sort of movement that was happening in Morocco in the 60s and sort of is still happening everywhere?
Well, thank you for this question. No, I mean, the answer is no. I was not aware of this. I mean, this particular book when I was in Morocco studying, because obviously, I mean, I was studying maths and I was preparing this very tough exams. So I didn't have much time during that period to go and delve into Moroccan literature or even like Moroccan, the history of post-colonial and post-independence Morocco. This is basically the kind of books that I discovered when I moved to France, when I started thinking about moving to academia and studying literature to start with, because I had to do the whole thing again from the beginning. And actually, I mean, when I discovered this whole generation in France, and I mean, I've heard of Khatibi's work when I was in Morocco. Obviously, there was something. He was there among others, but the facts I think that we were studying at the time, we were studying science, kind of prevented us, unfortunately, from moving and I mean, getting interested in literature, which is very interesting because this is something I really want to say, is that this separation between humanities and science is something really, really tragic. And I think for the new generations and the generations to come, this is the kind of separation that needs to be challenged, that needs to be broken. We need to teach literature to engineers, and we need to teach sociology to entrepreneurs and to marketing managers, because literature, sociology, the humanities in general, bring this kind of new and fresh perspective on some of the issues we're dealing with now, I mean, in society in general. And the absence of humanities and this separation between science and literature is something extremely negative, unfortunately. And I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I absolutely couldn't agree. I mean, this is part of the work that we're trying to do with Africa, is trying to get people to sort of engage with this stuff, regardless of the profession.
Go ahead. I just wanted to say that actually Khatibi, we've read his first one of his novels actually when we were in high school, and the interesting thing, and this is something I kept in my mind as well, is that when we read him in high school, we didn't kind of grasp the complexity and the wide range of topics he was dealing with. I mean, we were young at the time, and we read the novel as a novel. It's called A Summer in Stockholm, which is a very interesting novel about a translator who travels to Stockholm and kind of encounter Swedish literature and Swedish society. So it's a very deep reflection, as in other of Khatibi's works. On identity, otherness, the relationship with the other. So at the time we were not aware of all these questions. And when I went to Paris, I started studying literature, and I felt the need to go back and read all these Moroccan writers, starting from the first generation, and coming to the 1960s generation around the Moroccan Journal of Culture and Politics, Souffle en Fès. It started as a Francophone journal, which was founded in 1966 by a group of Moroccan poets and artists. And then they launched an Arabic counterpart in 1971. The journal started as a literary platform, publishing a lot of experimental poetry, a lot of avant-garde literature. And it was really the voice of this new generation, as you have said, that was too young to take part in the anti-colonial movement. But actually in 1966, there was this need to regenerate national culture, to reinvent a cultural identity. And so it started with the group included Moroccan poet Abd Latif Labi, who is another figure I work on, and he's on the right. Mohamed Khayreddin was also one of the co-founders. He's an Amazigh poet, a Berber poet from southern Morocco, who had a very tragic life, and he's probably one of the most subversive and inventive Moroccan poets of his generation. And Abdelkabir Khatibi, he's another interesting figure because he's the kind of eclectic intellectual. He's somebody who was trained as a sociologist, but then moved to literature, art criticism, philosophy, and he wrote all sorts of books and novels, fiction, nonfiction. He wrote about calligraphy, I'm saying maybe a lot here, but like what I'm trying, what I'm trying to say is that this generation sought to kind of rethink this idea of national culture in the years following independence. So, so that's what brought me to them.
Okay, so I want to understand the word generation. I find to be an interesting word because it suggests a beginning and an end. It suggests some sort of stimulus that starts something and some sort of endpoint that ends something, or maybe another stimulus that starts a new generation that's discernibly different than the first, right? Hmm. And so independence starts this generation. It instigates the beginning. There's a clear point. When does it end? When does this generation end? And why does it end?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. Obviously, there is a new generation of Moroccan writers, right? But I mean, Abd Latif Labi is still here and he's still publishing poetry, for instance, right? I think what happened, we can definitely consider the 1970s as a turning point. Because what happened in Morocco, I'm sure you're aware of the whole period we describe as the years of lead, which was basically from the 1960s and 1970s, and then moving up to the 1990s. But what happened, I think the 1970s, the Moroccan regime at the time, got very violent and a lot of suppression of political opponents at the time. And what I didn't mention is that this journal, Soufle, which actually started as a literary journal, turned into a political platform. So the journal actually, the main contributors of the journal in 1972 were arrested. And Abd Latif Labi, for instance, was arrested and tortured, and he spent 8 years in prison in Morocco. And there was like a huge international campaign, and then he was eventually released. What I'm trying to say is that the 1970s put some kind of stop to this, a brutal stop to this experience that was around this generation. But. What happened is that this generation kept writing and kept thinking about what are the possibilities. But obviously, the political situation in Morocco was extremely tough during the period, especially in the 1970s.
So if we come back to this book for a second, first of all, for the people who later listen to this as a podcast and can't see the slides, can you describe what this book is and the impact it sort of had, both on you, but also on the broader readership?
Yes, thank you. I mean, this is a book called Maghreb Pluriel. And I want to mention here that it has been translated very recently into English, last year, actually. And the title, it was translated under the title Plural Maghreb Writings on Postcolonialism. Mm-hmm. This is probably one of Abdelkabir Khatibi's most famous and most quoted books. For a simple reason is that he develops in this book some of his main ideas. Maybe I can give one example here.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So one of his because Abdelkabir Khatibi came up with some very interesting notions within this decolonial moment at the during that period. And although this book was published in 1983, some of the essays in this book, it's a collection of essays, some of it was published before, previously. Mm-hmm. So one of his notions, one of his concepts, for instance, a very interesting concept is double critique, what he called double critique. So basically, in order to rethink the Maghrebian identity, we need to criticize and to have this critical approach to both Western and local heritage. So this way of dealing in a critical way with both legacies, in a sense. Another of his interesting notions is this what he calls pensée autre, which is an other thought, which is basically a kind of challenging the dogmatic, static foundations of Moroccan and of North African Maghrebian society. So it's kind of putting some sorts of dynamic thinking within our modes of approaching social and cultural problems and issues. And one way to do that is through engaging, by opening to the world and engaging mm-hmm. with the world. So this kind of outward looking approach, which is very interesting because, I mean, as you all know, North Africa is in general, I mean, the Maghreb in particular, is a region which is often, either seen as part of, I mean, part of the Arab world, and sometimes it's seen as located on the edge of the Arab world, yeah. And sometimes it's considered close to Europe. Only 14 kilometers actually separates Tangier from Spain.
Yeah.
And sometimes we, as done recently, we put forward the African dimension of the Maghreb. Well, what Khatibi is saying here basically is that we need to kind of acknowledge all these dimensions and see how the Maghreb can relate to all these regions. How can we think of the Maghreb as part of the world in a sense? Which was, I mean, at the time, it may seem kind of natural to say this today, but like at the time, that was a very kind of creative and engaging reflection about the identity of the Maghreb. So what he does,
No, go ahead, and then I have a question about it.
So what he does in this book, basically, is that he applies this notions of double critique and other thoughts in various settings. So for instance, the way he reads Moroccan arts is very interesting. So mm-hmm. when he think back, for instance, about the work of someone like a Moroccan artist Sharqawi, he has this very interesting description where he refers to his work as a calligraphy of roots. That's very interesting. So because Sharqawi mm-hmm. goes back to Moroccan local culture and Moroccan local heritage, including orality, calligraphy, and mm-hmm. he uses that to create a modern form, artistic form, right?
Yeah.
So
this is a part of the Casablanca school.
Exactly. Yeah. And you, I mean, as you know, I mean, I didn't mention that at the beginning, but like the Moroccan journal Soufl was co-founded by a group of poets and artists, and one of the co-founders was actually Moroccan artist Mohamed Mlihi, who passed away, unfortunately.
So I have two questions, and then I want to talk about two of the projects that you've published in the last few years. The first question is a regional question, a question about how the regionality of this movement, and how much were these writers part of a regional movement? Were there other writers emerging in sort of Tunisia and Algeria that they were that were a part of this quote unquote generation, or was this very specific to Morocco? As readers and people who are trying to understand this, understand their work, should we confine it to Morocco at the time, or was this sort of a more broader regional movement of which they were a part?
No, I mean, it was definitely regional, and even it went beyond actually the region of the Maghreb. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, in his famous prologue to the first issue of the journal Soufl, so Abd Latif Labi writes basically that this new generation is interested and is welcoming contributions from North Africa, from the Arab world, from Africa. And indeed, what happened is that actually the journal published some articles by tricontinental writers, political activists. I can mention, for instance, Syrian poet Adonis, mm-hmm. and the leader of Guinea-Bissau, Amilcar Cabral. There's also a Haitian writer and poet, René de Pestre. So, I mean, this is just a couple of examples here that... I mean, of the fact that this journal thought of itself and this generation thought of itself as being in a relation to not only to the region, but to the world, basically, to the world, especially in the context of the struggles for national liberations that were ongoing, including in Africa. So there was this connection was quite powerful at the time.
So moving it, just to talk about this book that you just published, the subtitle is, well, the full title is Abdelkabir Kaatebi, Postcolonialism, Transnationalism, and Culture in the Maghrib and Beyond 2020. So the first question that emerges for me is, why did you think the world needed this book? That's the first question. And what do you know now after having finished it that you didn't know in the beginning?
Thank you. Yeah, these are like two very interesting questions. The first question, to answer your first question, what happened is that, and we still see that today, actually, North African, and not only North African, but I would say thinkers from the South, from the global South, tend to be, unfortunately, marginalized when it comes to world movements, when it comes to thinking about theory. In the case of postcolonialism, for instance, and postcolonial theory, Abdelkabir Khatibi was marginalized, was completely forgotten. I mean, he's not, if you take like books on postcolonial theory, I'm not sure you will find Abdelkabir Khatibi in there. One reason is that maybe probably the fact that he was writing in French at the time. I mean, he was somebody who writes exclusively.
So was Franz Fanon.
Yes, but yeah, exactly. But I mean, what happened with Abdelkabir Khatibi is that there was this idea that was spread about his works, is that he was someone you cannot read, someone who writes in a very complicated and convoluted way. And I mean, his works are challenging, that's for sure. But that's part of his approach and the approach of this generation to cultural and intellectual creation. Basically, what they're saying is that the reader needs at some point to make the efforts to read, right? To engage with this thought. And that's one reason. I think second reason is that he didn't get the commercial attention that some other figures received, right? So one aim of this book was really to do justice to his works and to bring back this figure of, this Moroccan intellectual who's been working across disciplines. That's what I find extremely important here, is that Abdelkabir Khatibi is somebody who was all in constant motion. He was moving from one discipline to another.
So he started, and geographically too, right?
No, geographically, interestingly, he studied in France. Yeah. So he completed his PhD in sociology in France. But then he was, he had like quite a unique position, I would say. I mean, a kind of powerful position. He said, basically, in order to decolonize Moroccan thought and Moroccan sociology, I need to go back home and to go back to Morocco. Which some other writers and intellectuals haven't done. I mean, that's a personal choice, obviously. But Khatibi was always advocating the need to operate and to work from home, from Morocco. So he went back to Morocco and he became the director of the Institute of Sociology. And he actually taught the new generation of Moroccan sociologists. That's very interesting.
You say that, in one of your articles, you describe him as a professional stranger, he describes himself as a professional stranger. He means that he is a stranger professionally. He sort of jumps around from profession to profession. Is that what he means by that?
That's one meaning. That's one possible meaning of it. The other meaning is the professional stranger in the sense that he engages with the other. Going back to this notion of being open to alterity.
Gotcha.
Of being in constant dialogue with the other, right? But like the kind of dialogue that is productive as well. I mean, that's the important thing here, is that it, like being in dialogue with the other, meaning seeing the other as a mirror where you can actually expand your knowledge and learn from the other and produce something that is richer than what you produced initially.
So what did you learn in putting this book together? What surprised you?
I mean, the thing I must mention here is that this is a co-edited volume. So I co-edited this book actually with my former professor at the University of Oxford, Jane Hiddleston. Yeah. So the first thing I learned is that actually a PhD dissertation can lead to this kind of projects, which is great. and working with my former professor was something, something I'm really proud of. And it was like seeing this book in print was also another, like almost as a second PhD dissertation. Is this as if I kind of managed to write to move on with two projects. What I learned on Khatibi, I learned so much on him. I mean, to be fair, co-editing a volume, a collective volume, is such an enriching experience because you end up dealing with, contributions coming from various perspectives, various countries. So for instance, in this book, we have contributors from Germany, from the UK, the US, Japan, Morocco. So, and as you co-edit the volume, you're kind of expanding your vision on the way Khatibi is read, not only in Morocco or in Europe, but also in other regions. The thing I learned throughout this book is that Khatibi's work hasn't been read sufficiently. And this book is actually an invitation to go back to his publication, to go back to his books, to go back to his thoughts, and to try to connect that thought and with maybe some of the issues and some of the questions we're dealing with at the moment. And this is where Khatibi was interesting, is that his work is an invitation to reconstruct our knowledge, right? To be in a kind of constant development. And this is something I think we need today.
Yeah. Okay. So one last question on Khatibi before I want to talk about your novel, and then we can go to the quick Q&A, and then hopefully get to some questions in the chat. So what do you disagree with him about?
First thing, I guess I disagreed with the fact that you need that, at least, I mean, my trajectory disagrees with the fact that you need to go back to your home country in order to operate and to work from there.
Is that a philosophical agreement, a disagreement, or a practical disagreement? It sounds more like a practical one.
It's a practical one. It's a practical one, because I think, no, but I mean, from a philosophical perspective, I think that we need scholars and intellectuals as much at home in our respective countries than abroad. I mean, that's one of the things that we need to keep in mind, I guess, is that, you know, in the so-called West, what happened is that the way we still look at Arab countries, we still look at the global South, you get this sense that there's still a number of stereotypes. There is still a persistent number of cliché and reductive representations. And I think the presence of us, I mean, scholars, intellectuals, writers, artists abroad, is very important sometimes in enlightening and kind of bringing this knowledge that is kind of culturally well-informed. Because, and especially at the moment, we see a lot of misrepresentations here and there, right? Yeah. Which are actually the results of not only of colonialism, but also of certain representations we have of the South. And I think our role is to kind of operate and intervene both in the West and at home to kind of correct this kind of misrepresentations. I don't know what was your other questions about.
No, that's great. Mm-hmm. I want to That's fantastic. I want to talk about what motivated you to write a novel and sort of engage in that medium. What is this novel about? You know, a foreign novel, it's written in French. So if you can just sort of tell us a little bit about what the novel is, why you were interested in writing this medium. Are you just seemingly following in his his footsteps?
Well,
doing
yeah.
Your best Khatebi impression?
Yeah, definitely. That's part of it. I mean, you know, yeah. When you spend so much time with this kind of figures, inspiring talking, figures, yeah. you get inspired, and I really admire him for that. I mean, this ability to jump from one discipline to another, which as you know, I mean, that was, I mean, if you think back to Arab philosophers, in the past, that was something like common, right? Philosophers being
polymaths.
Yeah, polymaths, exactly. And this is something, I think, this is another thing we need to encourage as well. This kind of interdisciplinary dimension of work, of research. That's one. And the second thing is opening to a broad audience. That's another thing that actually pushed me to write this novel. I mean, this novel, I wrote it while I was working as an engineer. So I was Moroccan and I had just the Moroccan citizenship at the time. I was living in France. And the thing is that I used to go every year, as all foreign students do, as all foreigners do, to go and renew my residence permits, right? Mm-hmm. And that was such an experience of anxiety, of being afraid of missing some documents each year I felt there's something problematic with this whole process. And the other thing, I wanted to write something about writing itself. What does it mean to write a novel? What does writing involve in terms of creativity, but also in terms of suffering, in terms of pain, right? So what I did in this novel is that I kind of merged these two topics together, and I obviously it's kind of inspired by my experience in France. So this is the story basically of a foreign student who is trying to write his first novel while actually he's grappling with the renewal of his residence permits. So the whole novel...
And his hatred of his engineering career.
No, he didn't. No, that was... I didn't mention this aspect there. But what interested me really here is to try to think about these questions of identity.
Sure.
Through the residence permits and through writing. Like, yeah. How does writing relate to identity? And what does it mean to renew a residence permit? So... Because, I mean, I've met a lot of foreign students and a lot of foreigners who actually struggle, and they the process of renewing this ID, which is an equivalent of an ID card, right, is extremely painful. And I wanted to turn this into a literary experiment, in a way, trying to describe, to reconstruct this whole process and putting together the writing of the novel, the process of writing itself, with the process of renewing the ID, the residence permits. So, it was a novel that was written in a specific moment. I'm not sure I would have rewritten it the same way today, but yeah. I was in a particular moment, and I thought, that's the other dimension, I thought that I need to kind of testify to the difficulties that foreigners have to face regularly, especially, I mean, in this case, in Europe and in European countries, as they go through the renewal of their ID documents.
So here's a final question before we get to that small little Q&A. Are you that, and I'm showing my hand here a little bit, do you reflect on identity that much?
You mean in the novel or in general?
No, in general, in your work. So I'll show my hand. For me, I find identity to be not that useful of a sort of framework to think about oneself. And I think largely, like, societally, a lot of the ills are sort of a consequence of us clinging to identity, right? Mm-hmm. All these different types of identities. But that might be, you know, that might be a, that's obviously a consequence of my own sort of personal perspective and, you know, lived experiences. So I'm curious, for your perspective, you know, like you're talking about like ID cards and you're talking about a lot of stuff related to identity. Mm. Is that something that you think about through your work, you know, through your scholarship?
I don't think of identity in this sense of like clinging to identity and, yeah. and kind of using a fixed identity. But what I'm trying to do is to kind of explore and question how identities are seen from mm-hmm. various perspectives. Yeah. Because I think that's key. Like your identity, your identity is seen differently from one perspective to another, right? And even in my current projects on which I'm working on, which kind of focuses on North African literature, recent contemporary North African literature, and the representation of the other. So I would say that I think of identity as a kind of dynamic concept, right? That is actually kind of concentrates some of the tensions that we face. Mm-hmm. When it comes to representing or misrepresenting ourselves or the other. I don't know okay. if I'm answering your
yeah,
question.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Okay, great. Let's do this quick Q&A. I didn't realize the time. Okay, so first of all, what are you reading or watching right now?
Okay, so watching, I don't have enough time to watch anything at the moment.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, unfortunately. So in terms of reading, I'm reading all sorts of things, to be fair. I'm currently reading a novel by a Cameroonian writer from the new generation. Mm. One reason why I'm reading it, because I will write a review of it. That's another cool. of my activities, because I enjoy
what's
writing.
The novel?
The novel is called Les Lumières de Oujda.
Okay.
Which is the lights of Oujda, and Oujda is a Moroccan city, and it's an interesting, it's kind of poetic, deconstructed a narrative about migrants and the work of associations, organizations working for migrants. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Who would you love to shadow for a day, past or present?
Well, I think I would say Abdelkabir Khatibi.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, definitely. I missed him in my high school.
In which decade would you want to shadow him?
I think I would have loved to shadow him in Paris, while he was in Paris studying sociology and preparing his PhD. And maybe go back to Morocco with him. Who knows?
was he a thorny character, or was he a sort of a friendly?
No, extremely friendly, extremely okay. friendly. And he was the interesting thing is that he was somebody who would encourage young scholars as well.
Yeah.
So he was okay. he had this kind of idea about transmission, right? Which is very important.
A mentor.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. What do people most misunderstand about your work?
So that's very easy. People, especially my friends who stayed in science and stayed and became engineers and working mm-hmm. in companies, they think that I work on my passion, basically. That they don't see my job as a job. They see it as somebody who's doing something he loves, which is probably true. But obviously, it's a job, and it comes with a lot of requirements and a lot of obligations. But there is this idea that actually literature is for fun, you know. I'm talking here about my generation, and you know, the context I mentioned earlier is that literature is for fun. Literature is for you to enjoy yourself, and literature as an object, as a scientific object. Is something like it's an idea that still needs to be pushed a little bit.
Khalid, can I give you a suggestion?
Yes.
I think your suggestion, I think your response to these people should be, yes, that's, I love my job. Why don't you love your job?
No, thank you. Yeah, I mean, of course. Well,
you should love your job too.
You should love. Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, this is something I didn't mention earlier, but I was very fortunate to kind of be able to switch career. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it took me some time. It took me some effort to kind of study while I was working and to kind of engage in this whole project of moving to something I love. And I'm aware as well that not all people have the opportunity to do that, right? Not mm-hmm. all people have the material or the, how can I say, like the energy as well to do that. This is something to keep in mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Okay. The last one real quick is whose work do you admire or are inspired by? Let's remove Khatibi out of it.
So whose work I admire and I'm most inspired by? I mean, to be fair, I think as a scholar, we learn not to, although I admire Abdi Kabir Khatibi among others, but I think as a scholar, you learn to seek inspiration and to take inspiration from a lot of figures and a lot of intellectuals. I mean, there are like Moroccan thinkers I appreciate and I read. I mean, someone I have to mention here is Abd Latif Labi, because he's a poet, he's from the same generation, and he's probably a very interesting figure, because he's somebody who kind of bridges that gap between politics, because he was a political activist and a poet, and he's such an inspiring figure, and he was the editor-in-chief of Soufl, of the journal. Okay. And actually, cool. I met him a few weeks ago, and nice. It's always a pleasure to talk to him and to learn about his work. And yeah, and he's just published actually a poetry collection, which is very interesting.
Wow, amazing. Okay, cool. So we have two questions so far, one from Shama and then the other one from Fatma. Shama, you want to unmute yourself?
Hi, Khalid. Hi, Mikey. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Great. Thank you.
So I just wanted to talk a little bit about identity, because I love doing that. Mikey knows this about me. But I think that when you downplay identity, well, I think, first of all, a lot of Moroccan authors are kind of obsessed with identity because, and otherization processes, not just authors, but also artists, including myself. The reason for that is because we really don't feel a sense of belonging with the Middle East, with the Arab world, and we don't feel a sense of belonging with Europe. We don't feel a sense of belonging with sort of Black African countries. And so we end up kind of feeling rejected from all sides, in a sense, depending on the context, and particularly political context. And so what I wanted to say is that, okay, while this is really problematic, it's very tough to downplay identity, because I think the repercussions for that are really dangerous. And if you think about when identity, especially religious identity, is downplayed, and look at countries like France, which I'm sure Khalid knows a lot about, when you get into the concept of laïcité and the systematic downplaying of religious identity, it creates a lot of social anxiety, you know, fuels existential malaise and terrorism, etc. And so I really think that the fight of this century is going to be about figuring out a way to move forward with our identity, because I think identities have been formed over centuries in a way that's focused on tribes. And then the world opened up and globalization and all these things happened, and technology is rapidly changing our world and the way we travel. And all of a sudden we're interacting with all these different people, but on a survival perspective, we're still kind of hardwired to categorize, right? To determine if someone is a threat or not. And so I really think that we have to think of ways to find new paradigms and new avenues of relating to the other and relating to communities across the world without having to resort to the sort of the tribal and immediate labels, whether they're religious or ethnic or gender labels, right?
Okay, yeah,
I'm actually curious. Let's frame it as a question for Khalid. Yeah. Let's see. Do you
Khalid,
think
does that make sense to you?
Or maybe there is a question.
So the question, I guess, would be: do you think that such paradigms are attainable? And for people like us, Moroccans, specifically who navigate different cultures, would that be something that is kind of easily accessible to us that we can also teach the world about? You know, when you talk about Maroc Pluriel, when you talk about these movements that teach what otherization is and how to overcome it. And I think for us as a country who is known for a lot of diversity, a lot of relationships between Jews and Muslims over centuries, how could we, and I get this question a lot actually from Arabs in the region, which is, you know, how does Moroccan do this relationship with the Jews differently, right? So how could we benefit from our history and from our civilization and our interactions with the other to create new paradigms for the world to follow or for the rest of the Arabic speaking world to be inspired by?
Great.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Shama, for this question. I mean, you're absolutely right. And I want to kind of emphasize one dimension, which is related to what you said, which is education, basically. The way we were educated, the way we grew up, and this kind of like some of the discourses that we received early on, I mean, we're kind of very extremely reductive, right? And I think that this is where literature and this is where culture and this is where education comes in. And I mean, I've been talking a lot today about this generation from the 1960s Morocco, but I think it's such an inspiring generation, and I'm always impressed by how topical some of the questions they were dealing with at the time in the 1960s and 1970s are still actually relevant today. This is something that actually struck me a lot as I'm kind of navigating through their works. I mean, one of the most important prominent figures from the Moroccan journal Soufle was a Moroccan Jewish political activist, Abraham Serfati. He was such like a huge, mm-hmm. he was one of these people who actually accelerated the political turning points of the journal. I think we need to shed light on these, how can I call it, like these transnational experiences, these forms of transnational and also interreligious dialogues, forms of dialogue. And we have this, I mean, we have this obviously, and you mentioned Morocco, we have a lot of examples that we can get inspiration from. But I think there is a responsibility among intellectuals and among writers and scholars and everybody really. Reaching out to wide audiences. That's an interesting thing because academia is often thought of as a sort of island, right? Enclosed island, not in connection with the world. So I think writing for the public is very important in this regard. We need to kind of find this new, as you've called them, new paradigms, and also communicate them to with and share them with broader audiences. And I think Afikra, by the way, is definitely one way to do that. One means to kind of make progress on that front.
I totally agree. And if I may add, it would be great to also have your book translated into Arabic, perhaps. And yes, if you could also speak about your work in Moroccan Darija, because I think when we talk about reforming the educational system, you know, if we are reforming it from kind of top to bottom and leaving it up to the government, they'll never have us, you know, engage with these topics. So it's really, as you said, up to people like you, scholars and artists, who spread this gospel in a way that is accessible to the populace.
I totally agree with you, Shama, 100%. One of the things I'm dealing with at the moment is trying to find a way to make the book available and affordable as well. That's an important thing in Morocco, because it's a way to kind of spread knowledge and to kind of spread also this kind of dialogue with these figures who were important in our history. Yes. So definitely, yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for everyone for sticking on for a few extra minutes. Please give us feedback at the link I put in the chat. And thanks for all of your questions and your interests, and hope to see you on the next event on Saturday. Bye. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. We have new episodes coming every single week. Make sure you follow us on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. You can find us at afikra.com for information about all upcoming events. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks a lot. See you next time, and stay curious.